Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Sharad and I are joining you from Sarawak today. We are at Riverside Majestic Hotel in Kuching. And our guest today is Simon Sia. He's a Kuching-based lawyer who does has worked on a number of native customary rights over land in Sarawak. And that's our topic of discussion today. Simon, welcome to the show. It's good of you to join us.
Thank you.
So I understand that Malaysia has adopted the United Nations Declaration for the Rights of Indigenous People in 2007, but there's still a number of issues for Indigenous communities, particularly around land rights. And we want to talk about native customary rights over land in Sarawak. Maybe you can help us understand what is the issue at hand here. Could you explain?
You see, in Sarawak, when you talk about land, normally as common people, as lay people, will understand that to own land, you have to have titles. In Sarawak, unfortunately in Sarawak, a lot of the natives in Sarawak, if you travel along the rural areas, you will see that most of them do not have land titles over land. So a lot of them are actually living on land without titles. And because the native themselves, they have this adat called the native adat to claim over lands, and I would normally use the example of the Ibans, where their adat is over pemakai menua. Pemakai menua is an Iban terms for territorial domain. Territorial domain, it means that let's say you give example like in Kuching town, Kuching is my territorial domain, or Cebu is my territorial domain. It's like a district. So within this territorial domain, you have two other concept of adat called the Pulau Galau and the Temudat. The Pulau Galau is known as the forest reserve. So even before our independence, the native themselves already have this kind of idea that they should conserve forests for the use of future generations. Because in the forest itself, it is where they will go and gather for food, they will go and hunt. This is like the supermarket. This was actually quoted in some of the case law. And inside the pemakai menua, you also have temudat. Temudat is normally area where they settle, or where area where they plant, cultivations. And a lot of people sometimes they say that, oh, you know, the native can just, you know, point to a certain areas and then that says that that is their land. There is a misconception on this, because the native, whenever they claim for their NCR land, what they do is there is a boundary that is predetermined, that is a natural boundary. In Iban, it's called Tinting. Tinting is a mountain ridges. Or the boundary can be a river or can be small streams. And that is how they determine their areas. So these boundaries, even back then before the brooks, other community who enter into the boundary are actually considered as trespassers. The headhunting areas, eras, there are some documented histories that says that because of this trespass into land, that is why they were sort of like quarrels, there were war involved there as well. So these are territorial domains that has been passed down from generation to generation until today. But from the day that we have gained our independence in Sarawak, a lot of our natives still do not have land title over land.
Right, I want to ask you about that, because it seems like what you described is a pre-colonial era, a deeply cultural way of thinking about land,
yes.
About its use and whose rights over it and so on. And then you have the colonial period and the post-colonial period that actually in some ways is just a mimic of the colonial period. Mm. We continue, yes, with so-called modern notions of ownership and,
yes,
such. What we see today, is it essentially a clash between pre-colonial ideas of a man's relationship and society's relationship to land and modern notions of who gets to exploit land for whose benefit?
Yes, in fact, there was a few case law actually talks about this as well, because the adat, the custom of the native people to claim land, was already there before the existence of law. They compare even with the British eras where, you know, they have kings and queens before for a very long time. Whereas in Sarawak, we didn't have kings, we didn't have queens, we didn't have the monarch until the Brunei Sultan came in. And they have been practicing this adat for a very long time. So they have no ideas about the importance of registration of land to get titles and all these things. And they have been continuously practicing this adat, this custom, for many, many years, even until today. And the worrying thing is, despite our independence, our government did not think that it is suitable for them or it is fitting for them to survey land and give them the title. So a lot of our native until today still do not have this land title over
their
land.
So does the law recognize this adat, that the use of, you know, generations of land ownership, but without a paper document, which is a land title?
Yes. In fact, under Section 5 of the Sarawak Land Code, they recognize that NCR land exists without title. So native who have NCR land, you own the land as a licensee. So when you own the land as a licensee, the government is supposed to protect you. It's supposed to not give away land without first extinguishment. Under Section 15 itself, it is stated that NCR land cannot be given away, cannot be alienated to anybody without first extinguishment of NCR land. So there's a duty, in fact, for the government to ensure that they go and check, they go and survey the land before they give title to anyone else. Compensation must be paid. And that has been our argument for many, many years. But unfortunately, whenever we go to court, the government position is that we only recognize the temudak, which is the settlement and the cultivated area, but not
the forest reserve.
Not the forest reserve. And which makes the ancestors look very silly, because they have been conserving the land for many, many years for the future generations. But the moment the future generations wants to use it, it is taken away.
How much land is actually designated native customary land?
As in from the government?
Yeah, I mean, has the government, what level of recognition has there been for land as NCR land?
The government does not, if you see news, normally the government says that they have surveyed a big piece of land and all these things. But those lands are not generally not Pulau Galau, not the forest reserve. It's only the small cultivated area. The opposition has always been very similar, that we are just going to give you the cultivated area. The cultivated area is, the cut-off date is actually from the 1st of January of 1958. And they determine it by looking at the aerial photograph, which if you look at the aerial photograph, the area is actually very small. So the government never actually like seriously consider what part of the land should be given other than the cultivated land.
An issue of surveying the land, right? Of documenting what type of land. So what is the challenge here? It's the fact that before 1958, there was no ability to survey the land, or a lack of documentation over that? Is that the historical problem?
One of the common excuses that the government always use, and this is also documented in some of the case law, the government always said that, oh, we cannot survey the land, it's too big. And that is why and the title that they normally give to the company, or even timber licenses that they give to the company, the requirement is for the company and the timber company to go and do the survey. But look at it this way. If I give you a piece of land that is 1,000 hectares, and in the title it is stated that if you eventually survey the land and you found out that some part of the land is not available to you, this was the word used, not available to you, then you have to report to the land and survey, and we will excise it out, we'll take it out. But you pay 1 million for it. Would you want to reduce your land so that the native can benefit from it for the money that I pay? As a corporation, definitely not. So the law itself the practice itself is done in such a way it is not beneficial to the native. The government in a way wash their hand and ask the company, this is your duty, you have to go and do the survey. And, you know, if you found it, then you let us know. Most of the time, the company doesn't do
it. It's been outsourced. That
yeah.
So what I understand, of course, is you know, the Sarawak government is made up of natives and Chinese descent and Malays, whatever it is, right? They must understand the feelings of the people on the ground. How is it that they continue this practice and not pay a political price for it? Or do they pay a political price for it?
If we go back on history, Stephen Kalon Lincoln, the first chief minister of Sarawak, his campaign back then was to have all these NCR land surveyed, including Pemakaian Benua and Pulau Galau. That was his intention, and that was also his downfall. And after that, you rarely hear anyone from the government's politicians, who consists of the native themselves sometimes, who talk about this anymore. You sometimes hear from the opposition's politicians like Baru Bian. Other than that, you don't really hear it. Then whether or not they pay a political price for it, I could name names as well. There are ministers levels whose supporter will come and see me to file a challenge in court against company because their NCR land was taken. Not just one minister, there are a few ministers, and yet they themselves, being ministers, could not do anything about it. Their followers have to come to us. It was one, some of them were even proposer and seconder for the candidate himself, and yet these ministers could not help them. Why is it that they have never paid a price for this? I would not dare say it out loudly, but we all sort of know that there must be a certain level of patronizing done in the constituency.
Okay. All right, Simon, we're going to take a quick break, but let's come back and continue this conversation. A lot still to unpack about native customary rights over land, particularly here in Sarawak. Stay tuned to consider this. We'll be right back. Thanks so much for staying with Sharad and I on Consider This. Let's continue our conversation with Kuching-based lawyer Simon Sia. He's done a lot of work on native customary rights over land here in Sarawak. And I want to ask you, based on some of the cases that you've worked on, how difficult is it for the Indigenous community to prove that this is their land without having a grand banner or a land title?
So normally, when we go to court, the difficulty is always that because we don't have paperwork, we don't have paper traces to trace back the land or their ancestry. So a lot of the times it is by oral evidence. So we try, but paper traces, all this paper documentary evidence, we also try and get it out. Things we will try and get out is like rubber plates. You know, back then they used to plant rubber and was given subsidy to plant rubber, so we used all these documents that we have, and or if they have like birth certificates, if their identity card, so all these things will become part of our evidence. But the difficulty is always there's no direct evidence to show that they have documents to prove that they own the land. So that became a very big problem, and whenever we go to court, we can only use oral evidence.
And I wonder about that because we're talking about 1958, yes. Right? The 1958 is the kind of cutoff point for the proof of or evidence of your ownership, right? So with time, surely people will pass on, mm-hmm. and you will lose that level of evidence or witnessing, right? Because people die. Yes. What happens then?
So when it comes to that kind of situations, that's why the difficulty is always there. The land and survey will come up with the aerial photograph and show to us that, oh, you know, back then the clear area is only this big.
So can you explain? The aerial photographs were taken by the colonial government in the 50s.
Yes, it is taken by the British government in the 1940s, starting from the 1940s, all over Sarawak. They took it up to 1960-something. So what happened in court is normally we will compare the aerial photograph before 1958 and after 1958. Then we will show to the land and survey will also show to the court. And our argument is that, you see, from before 1958, the area probably like maybe we say like about 200 hectares, and it has increased to 1,000 hectares in 1960s. Then our argument is that over time, it will have increased even more until today. So it is proof that there has been occupation, because one of the evidence that we have to prove is occupations. But there are some cases where we are very fortunate where we actually have documents from the district office, which our client has kept in their possessions, very big maps with handwritten notes from probably the district officers or the British then, that this particular piece of land belongs to certain people. So in this kind of cases, we won the case. It is easily won in that kind of situations. But For other cases with no such documentary evidence, it is very, very difficult.
Give us a ratio. I mean, I can imagine that there must be so many cases. I saw a figure quoted like 400 cases still backlogged in the courts. What's the, I mean, how many cases are won? How many cases are resolved concretely?
Before 2016, when we go to court, there was a period of time where successes are quite high. We don't have exact figures, but everyone, once in a while, whenever we file these kind of cases, the court, because there was a case law that says that the oral evidence is important and it actually shows the livelihood of the community, and that is how we prove NCR. But since 2016, because of the Tuairumah Sandas decision in the federal court says they take the position of the government that you cannot claim Pemakai Menua and Pulau Galau, the territorial domain and the forest reserve. You can only claim the area that is cleared. Since then, every case that have gone to court is lost. I just came back from a federal court ruling in November, and in that case, the court says the same thing. They said, no, even though the state government now recognizes it, but when the decision was made, it was not recognized. So
it's a deeply conservative position by the federal court.
Yes.
In favor of the state government.
Yes.
I want to ask you, because there's some, there are different types, I guess, of cases that are brought. One of them would have been that land titles are given to developers, and then somebody is seeking to claim parts of that land as native customary right. What happens in that scenario?
In that kind of scenarios, that's why the federal court decision also stated that once the government gives titles to the company, the title becomes indivisible. Meaning to say, you cannot defeat the title. Whoever owns the title, he has rights over the title. So even when we go to court, if we manage to prove NCR over the land, we cannot get back the land. The native cannot get back the land. The only thing that they can get is compensation. And the problem, another problem arises is that all these titles are normally issued without the plaintiff, without the native knowledge. Let's say it is issued in.
They're not informed.
They are not informed. So it is something that is done in secrecy. So it can be issued out in 2001. Nobody would have known it. Nobody would have gone to the land and survey and asked, oh, have you issued any title? Nobody would ask that. So in 2001, let's say they issue in 2001, but then the company didn't do anything. Some of the company, they pay a premium for the land, even though there's a requirement for them to do plantation within 2 years. They don't do it. They keep it for a long time. And in 2007 or 2008, then they start coming into the land. Then only the native would have known. Then when the native mount a challenge to court, and let's say we win the case and we claim compensation, but the land could not be given back. But there's a clause in the Sarawak Land Court that says that you can only claim compensation within 3 years of the title being issued. So if it is issued in 2001, if you do not file your claim in 2004, you are doomed. You cannot even get compensation. So it's a double whammy for the native. So the situation is very, very bad. So when some of the ministers says that, oh no, we never take land, in a way they are correct. Then the government themselves did not take the land from the native, but the land was given by the government to the company.
Simon, there are many other jurisdictions that may be facing the same issue. I'm thinking about Canada, about Australia, with indigenous communities, yes, who probably also face the same issue of customary land rights. Are there best practices, or are there practices that we can look to other jurisdictions that we may, you know, be able, yes, to have some legal reform?
Yes. In fact, in Australia nowadays, they have this something called Native Land Tribunal. Because when you talk about NCR land, the evidence normally come from oral evidence. So you cannot take evidence based strictly on the Evidence Act. So in the native tribunal, what they will do is that the judge or the magistrate will be sitting there, and then they will listen to all the native community and listen to them and see which particular part of the land can be used for development, which particular part of the land must be conserved. So in other jurisdictions, like in Canada and Australia, they have done very well by doing this tribunal. And this is one of the proposals that we have been bringing up. In fact, last year, through the native court, there were a study over the native court. They wanted to use the native court of Sarawak to do this tribunal, because this is the only way for us to, you know, sort of give and take. The native are not against development. They want development, but they want development to be inclusive. They want to be informed. That is why when you talk about UNDRIP in the very beginning, our country is a signatory to UNDRIP. But under the law, as long as, even though you are a signatory, but if you have not ratified into your law, we are just signatory.
Mm. What happens now? What are the levels of access to justice for Native communities? You work with Native communities. Is it very burdensome to launch a legal challenge in these kinds of scenarios?
So that's why even in Sarawak here, we don't have a lot of lawyers doing this kind of NCR cases. And the Native, of course, they don't really have the means to engage lawyers. So it would be just the few lawyers who are willing to do these cases. But even so, when we go to court, the challenges is always logistic, evidence, and the community themselves have to be very strong. But sometimes, because some of these cases take too long, or it requires too much money as well, you know, to get documents and all these things. Because the moment the Native come down to court, they have to charter a bus. If let's say they live very far away, then they have to look for a place to stay here in Kuching, or if it is in Cebu, then in Cebu. So all these are costs that they have to incur. So which is very, it's not practical. Mm. And because of the case in Torumasanda, I myself also personally, I have told them that, you know, at the moment, I cannot take any more cases because of that case, the moment I file in, it will be struck out. So walls have, my feelings is that they keep on building walls to stop them. Despite whatever the government has been saying that they are trying to make right whatever they have done wrong. But to me, it doesn't seem so. A lot of the land here, NCR lands, has already been given up with titles. Given titles to companies, to plantation companies, to timber companies.
Are you optimistic that things will change? I'm just wondering, I mean, this is such a long-standing issue and, you know, there's been so many cases unresolved and still waiting and or not, you know, not gone the way that you may have hoped for. Are there changes in the pipeline or, you know, low-hanging fruits that might be able to help towards a better conclusion for this?
The state government have passed Section 6A of the Land Code. In Section 6A, they specifically recognize territorial domain. But then they have limits to it. They say you can apply first 500, then after that 1,000 hectares. But even that, I am not very confident that this will bring benefits because some of the communities, there are smaller areas. Some communities are very big area. How do you determine whose land should be put in the area or whose land should not be included in the area? I always try to be optimistic. I say in the future, you know, some of these people may have changed their mind because, you know, they themselves are Dayaks. They may want to do something better for their own community. But at the moment, it still looks very bleak.
I want to ask you about the future, the next generation of indigenous, for the indigenous community. Mm. As they move out into the cities, as they go overseas to work, do they care as much about the question of land? What is it for them? Is it a business proposition? Is it an identity issue? Will land still be relevant or salient for them?
You see, that is why the moment we do not resolve these NCR problems, then we will have rural-urban migration. A lot of them decided to move out from their kampongs because there's just no opportunity. I have a case which is right now in my hand. The Tuai Rumah name is Tuai Rumah Ramba Anak Bungkong. In his area, the young people, they all wanted to come back and help in the community. What they did was they applied to MPOB, the palm oil board, mm-hmm. and they get fundings, you know, from this is a government funding. They get fundings to actually go and plant in their own land. They went and harvest, they went and cleared the NCR land, and then they started wanting to plant. Before they were able to plant, the land was given to a company. The company came in and started planting on their own. So the native themselves, they want to be part of these projects to enhance their own community, but they cannot. Right. So the native youth actually they want to be staying on to continue to harvest on their own land to continue the traditions, but there's just no possibility, just no possibility at all.
Simon, thank you so much for shedding some light on this very complicated issue. We appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Kuching-based lawyer Simon Sia, and that wraps up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Agus.
And I'm Sharad Putin, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching. Good night.
Good night.